Good morning, everyone. It's so great to see you all here in person, and those of you that are online, thank you. We really appreciate your time and commitment to the commission. First, I want to wish you happy holidays to you and your families, and wish you a prosperous new year. And also, I want to thank Luke, who's running around there busy as always, Luke and Cindy and Eric for their support and keeping us informed and helping us further the mission and business of the commission. So thank you. So with that, we can call the meeting to order at 9:37. I know we are one person short of quorum, but Clark is on his way, but we can get started and... Clark entered the building. Great. So we've reached quorum. Awesome. So with that, Cindy, are you ready to go over meeting procedures?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. We're grateful to have Delray Yacht Club host us and have audiovisual support from AGP staff. Restrooms are through the door at the back of the room, to the left and down the hall. For if you need Wi-Fi, the network is DRYC Clubhouse, and the password is Palawan1108. I've posted this on the door as well. This meeting is in a hybrid format in which members and the public are participating both remotely and in person. For remote participants, if you need technical support connecting to or using the Zoom meeting platform, please email it@agpvideo.com. This email is also listed on the meeting agenda if you need to reference it. Now, I will provide some information on how public participation will be organized for today's meeting. You must be in the room or on Zoom to make public comment. Members of the public may request a comment in the following ways. If you're in person, please fill out a speaker card located at the back table and hand it over to either Luke or I. And if you're participating via Zoom, you can raise your hand virtually when we reach the item under which you'd like to speak. The raise hand function is at the bottom of the screen on the Zoom app. If you're calling in over the phone, dial *9 to raise your hand and *6 to unmute yourself. This meeting is being recorded and live streamed, so we ask that you please speak clearly. Please remember to turn on your microphone when you speak and turn it off when you finish speaking, per the instructions just provided. That concludes the overview of meeting logistics. Chair, I recommend we move to member roll call for attendance and introductions.
Please, Cindy, go ahead.
I will call members in alphabetical order by last name. Please introduce yourself and state your affiliation. Starting off, we have Sabrina Ashton.
Present with the Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board. Thank you. Thank
you. Marcella Benavides.
Present with LA County Flood Control District, representing Director Mark Bostrella.
Thank you. Jacob Berman.
Present on behalf of Los Angeles City Councilwoman Tracy Park.
Andy Kordeski.
Present, Board President at Las Virgenes Municipal Water District.
Laura Doss-Hertz.
Present, Vice President of the Bay Foundation.
Thank you.
Board.
Tom Ford.
Tom Ford, Director of the Santa Monica Bay National Estuary Program.
Dean Francois.
I'm here, Council Member from Hermosa Beach, representing the South Bay Council of Governments. Thank you.
Karen Mogus.
Present with the State Water Resources Control Board.
Dan Murphy.
Present, Los Angeles County Fire Department.
Jenny Newman.
Present, Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board, representing Cal EPA.
Carrie Nichols.
Present, representing Heal the Bay.
Aaron Orderer.
Present, representing County Supervisor Lindsay Horvath.
Michael Quill.
Present, representing Los Angeles Waterkeeper.
Greg Rashaw.
Present, representing Black Surfers Collective.
Lauren Salisbury.
Present, representing Santa Monica Travel and Tourism.
Clark Stevens.
Good morning, representing Resource Conservation District of the Santa Monica Mountains.
Martha Tremblay.
Present with LA County Sanitation Districts and honored to be the chair of this commission.
Thank you. Aaron Wilson-Olgan.
Present, representing the California Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Attending remotely, we have Erica Gielenski.
Good morning, everyone. Erica Yalinsky with U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Region 9, the Santa Monica Bay National Estuary Program Coordinator.
Thank you. That concludes the roll call. Member, I recommend we move, or Chair, I recommend we move to the next item.
Great. Thank you, Cindy. So with that, the next item is comments from members of the public on items that are not on the agenda. And I believe we have one request for public comment at this time. And Luke, in light that we have a lot of activities this 3 minutes per speaker.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, we have one commenter in person. Mitchell, please step up to the podium. And once we get your timer on the screen, feel free to begin.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. This has to do with a burnout coastline at Malibu. The city of Malibu hired Environmental Science Association. They used the U.S. Geological Survey modeling to figure out coastal hazards, including tidal inundations, shoreline erosion, storm flooding, and wave action, you know, current conditions. What I'm getting at is this organization should put on the agenda the possibility of counties and state purchasing that burnout land. This is an obvious, to me, obvious benefit to the Los Angeles residents who need parks, recreation. They are, you see it on the, we all see it on the weekends, people looking for a beach to go to, which were blocked out by the housing there, which has mostly been there in the last 100 years. This land should go back to the public is what I suggest. Now, the city council of Malibu is generally in favor of this. Not so much going back to the state, but the viability of rebuilding there. So, you know, I got an article out of the Malibu Times newspaper a couple of weeks ago, and I'm trying to, they're talking about the viability, because of the lack of viability, they're talking about in the next 50 years, 2.5 to 6.5 feet of sea rise, and the septic tanks. This has to do with y'all, the water quality. The septic tanks, with the ocean rising and the water from the land table going down, the septic tanks are going to burst, causing the pollution of the ocean. So, I think I hit on the major things, but actually, again, I'll say or reiterate, the Malibu City Council, Silverstein, who's on there, they're really questioning whether or not they should rebuild there. This is a big issue for the Bay, for the people of Los Angeles to get those beaches. We don't have a lot of beaches here. They're crowded. And don't forget your insurance. If they do go in, your insurance rates are going up. Everybody's. I don't know what else to say. I'll give this to the chairman to read. It's for real. Thank you.
Thank you, Mitchell. Chair, we have no other public commenters at this time.
Okay.
For this item.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for taking your time to make public comment. So with that, we'll move to the next item on our agenda, and it's the order of the agenda. Are there any requests to make any changes to the order, or we're good with what's there? All right. All right. Hearing none. Okay. So I guess I'm seeing that there is a request that the Bay Foundation asked that item 4C go before 4B. And basically, it would be the discussion on the action plan ahead of discussion of a resolution. I guess I'm open to that, but with a caveat that the action plan is an information item and that we allow for discussion, but that we allow enough time before the end of the meeting for to cover the resolution item. Does that sound like a reasonable? Any other thoughts or concerns, questions on this proposed revision? It's just changing the order, and we will make sure that we have time to discuss the action plan and make time for the resolution also. Both are just information items.
Sounds good to me, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Let's move on. Sorry, I missed that. Okay. So next item is report from the chair. Just want to share that with you all that on November 20th, the executive committee met. At that time, the committee approved for their 2026 meeting calendar. Also discussed drafting a resolution that is on today's agenda. That item will be discussed as item 4B. And then we also discussed recommendations regarding the draft action plan, which is another information item in today's agenda. That was the last committee meeting for the year, and we'll be meeting again in January. So that's all I have to report at this time. Any questions on executive committee activities? Okay. Moving on to the next item, and that's the report from the Technical Advisory Committee. Luke, I believe I saw Eric. Eric, good to see you.
Yeah, again. Thanks. Eric Stein, Vice Chair of the Technical Advisory Committee. Dan Pandela can be here today, so I'm happy to report on the meeting from the outcome from our last Technical Advisory Committee meeting. The main item on the agenda was the report on the wetlands chapter for the State of the Bay, which you'll hear a report on later today. We also talked a lot about, through that program, alignment between some of the monitoring in the State of the Bay and some of the statewide and regional programs, which I'll also touch on during the presentation later today. The last substantive item we talked about at the, in addition to the items that Tom will report on in terms of updates to the CCMP, were some observations about impacts to coastal habitats, particularly eelgrass and kelp, associated with runoff from the recent Palisades fire. And so that's an item that the Technical Advisory Committee plans to agendize for further discussion in terms of additional needs for monitoring or management relative to those potential impacts associated with coastal habitats. The last item we discussed was that we are in the season for appointments and reappointments for the next iteration of the TAC. Some of the appointments are sunsetting, so many of the members are going to sort of re-up, except for Dr. Alvina Mahinto has decided to step down, so we thanked her for her service. And the TAC will be having additional discussions about needs for other technical expertise that we might want to solicit for future membership on the TAC. With that, I'm happy to take any questions.
All right, any questions for Eric at this time? So, Eric, I do have a question. Is there information in terms of what, for consideration for the TAC, what sort of experience you're looking for, and where can someone find that information in case maybe some of our commission board members think that there's someone out there that would be helpful in being part of this committee?
Martha, we did talk about that, and I think we decided that as we look into the next iterations for updates to the CCMP, that we would use that process to identify expertise that might be prudent to add. One of the things that did come up was we currently don't have expertise that's specific on shoreline monitoring, shoreline erosion, and those types of issues, so that might be a potential topic area. But we anticipate that we may identify additional areas of expertise as we think about the update process and what needs we have moving forward.
All right, great. Thank you, Eric, for the report.
Thanks. Thank you.
So next item is 2D, report from the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission Administrative Director, which is Luke, and then the National Estuary Program Director, Mr. Ford. So, Luke.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to keep my remarks brief in the interest of time. Also, Eric took one of my updates, so thank you for doing that. So just to reiterate what Eric said about the TAC appointments, if if anyone wants more information about that process or about what it takes to get on to become appointed, reach out to staff, and we can provide you with that information. And along those lines, there's other important governing board business coming up in early 2026, and that is the selection of 7 governing board members. So our memorandum of understanding stipulates that the voting governing board members shall nominate and elect 7 entities to serve as voting members of the governing board, and they serve 2-year terms. And 2 representatives of those 7 are set aside for environmental or public interest organizations. There are 2 business or economic interests in the watershed. One of them must be involved in the coastal tourism industry. And then there are 3 at-large seats included in that 7. So election procedures, as well as frequently asked questions, will be distributed when the nomination period opens. And that nomination period is typically about a month before the first governing board meeting of 2026. So I'm going to try and have that coincide with the January executive committee meeting. So more information on that will be distributed in a few weeks, but just wanted to put that on your radar now. And if you are currently one of those 7 elected members, just to consider rejoining or self-nominating. And that concludes my update.
Thanks, Luke. Luke, if you could pull up that presentation that I provided.
Yes, sorry. Give me one moment.
No worries. No apologies. So we bring some imagery from the field to the meeting today, as well as focus on the efforts of the Bay Foundation to help pursue the goals and actions associated with the current strategic plan. Several of these certainly clearly overlap into where we imagine we're moving in the future. And just quickly from a personal note, I know that I was challenged this year quite significantly with a lot of things that have been going on. Globally, nationally, and some of the challenges that we faced as a local community here in Los Angeles. And I'm just grateful, full of gratitude, perhaps, in reflection and acknowledgement of the holiday season, that we're still here assembled. We're still doing great work, and appreciate all the contributions of all of you to help advance this program to help protect this beautiful place and the people who enjoy it. So next slide, please, Luke. That was the start of 2025, right there, I think, albeit maybe 7 days after the turning of the calendar, but I think it really did kick off a lot of considerations and a new era of consideration and collaboration around this community to figure out what it means to live in LA and build a viable future that we can work towards. So I'm very pleased to have seen all of the discussion that's gone on around this table and our other committees to try to advance work to figure out how we can better play a role in not hopefully revisiting a scene that looks quite this tremendous. Next slide, please. And this is actually a video, Luke, if you can click on the lower left corner. I'm reminded of Robert Frost, the world will end in fire or the world will end in ice, roughly quoted, didn't include rising sea levels. So that is King Harbor on a king tide just a few weeks back, and where we also incorporating, there was very little swell this day. It was flat, so we were all heading out to go diving. If there was a big wave event moving through the area, that could have been another 6 inches, another foot higher. This is a reality that many of us are alert to. Just bringing that back up to us, because this is certainly one of the things that we're striving towards. How are we going to adapt to sea level rise, reflective of where Mr. Lockman's comments were coming from earlier today as well. Next slide, please. One of the ways that we've been pursuing that collectively is trying to look at living shoreline approaches, establishing vegetation out there to put back habitat for wildlife, but also increase the verticality of the beach. And then the roots and the branches help retain the sand. And we actually have an opportunity to reduce coastal flooding and erosion with a living solution that's very cost effective and provides a lot of ecosystem services and benefits to the public. It's been a pleasure this year and the past couple years to watch people's eyes of all ages just pop wide open going, I didn't know there could be flowers on a beach. There's butterflies everywhere here. Oh my God, how is that possible? So a reminder of getting outside of our bubble and remembering where we're meeting folks on the street as to how they consider our spaces and always how we bring them on board, I think, into our work. The image on the right is just a reminder for me that you know we're working with a lot of young people. The job's not done. So in that case, we're assessing using some cool little mapping tools to figure out what's working, what's not, so we continue to adapt and improve our approaches. Next slide, please. And, you know, I'm sitting here in my blazer today. I'm often in my shorts and my boots. Here's the team weeding, sorting seeds and putting them into bags, and then we dry them and we... And the nice thing about the expansion of our dune work at this point is that it is providing its own seed bank for future dune work, which is another place where the community can come involved, help us collect the seeds. They come back, they distribute the seeds, and that full circle engagement has really been something else to see amongst some of our frequent flyers out there. Hundreds of folks coming out from the community to join us in this work. Next slide, please, Luke.
And sorry, I just wanted to mention Rory Skay has now entered the meeting.
Excellent. we were down in Manhattan Beach just last week, and we just happened to be there for this one. This is another video, Luke. That is, yeah, that is life. So that's, I believe that's a red-tailed hawk. I didn't get a good look at it. I'm not a great birder, but that crow obviously ended up on the other side of the deal. next item, please. So going from the tough images to, hey, look, that looks like fun. Working with a team out of UCLA, doing a lot of oceanographic monitoring in and around the Santa Monica Pier and breakwater to see if there's something happening with that breakwater that may be influencing water movement, which may be contributing to the poor water quality that persists in that area, as well as trying to understand how we might better protect the Santa Monica Pier through management or maintenance of that breakwater. So we were out much of the month of September and October, and we couldn't neglect the fact that we were putting vibrant pink dye into the water, doing a lot of public outreach associated with that, and that the Pacific Park mascot is Inky. And so Inky was turned into Drinky Pinky. During September, and it was a lovely time to engage folks in that. I thought everybody knew that octopuses can express ink when they need to. Newsflash, not everybody knows that. Because there was a lot of people going like, I don't get the octopus. Anyway, thanks, team. There's an image of some of the emergent breakwater that's still out there, a reminder that based upon work from the TAC and others, that our rocky intertidal systems are some of our most vulnerable to heating, be that with the water or the air, as well as sea level rise. And, you know, very little progress to date is figuring out how we might be able to work with this system to try to help it persist into the future. Next slide, please. Do you like this picture?
No,
you don't like this one either, Laura. So I know that you all had a tough time getting here through traffic. This is what our commute looks like sometimes. We were about 2 miles off the coast of Dockweiler Beach, just off of El Segundo, when we came across this, what we estimated to be a 10-foot-long Mako shark, finishing off a sea lion. And about a half hour later, we were jumping over the back of the boat, swimming around in that same ocean. We were far away. I don't think it followed us, but
nonetheless, there's some amazing things happening off of our coast. Next slide, please. We have long been reintroducing abalone here in Southern California. In the case of white abalone, trying to prevent them from going extinct, aiding in their recovery, but also interest in red abalone recovery. The goals there is maybe someday we get back to having a fishery. Won't understate, or I can't overstate, the cultural connection of many of our First Nations, the indigenous peoples of this coast, and their relationship with abalone. So the image to the left and on the right are an idea of where it starts. We take our abalone from farms, we measure them, we tag them, we organize them, we place them in the bottom of the ocean, we come back and release them a month later or that same day. And in the frame on the left were folks from a band of the Chumash who joined us in this process. Were out on the boat with us this next day, and it was the first time that abalone were returning to the ocean inside the newly established Chumash National Marine Sanctuary. So it was a real honor and a pleasure to be with them that day and take them through this process, and we expect to build even greater partnerships with these folks moving forward. Next slide, please, Luke. We're almost there, folks. Because I had to carry all that gear and put it in a car, take it out of a car, put it on a boat, take it out of the boat, bring it down to the bottom of the ocean floor, bring it back up, put it in the boat, take it off the boat, put it in the car, as well as our team fabricating most of that material that you see there, just wanted to underscore a lot of the hard work of the teams behind all of this that goes on in order to try to recover our ocean from past harms and to, you know, aid it in its health in the future, which always feels great. Which should bring us to our final slide. Yay! So again, thank you all for everything you've been doing. Happy holidays, end of the year. I'm looking forward to rolling up our sleeves and getting to work again in 2026.
Great. Thank you, Tom and Luke, for your reports. Are there any questions for Tom or Luke on their reports on all this good work that's going on? All right. All right, hearing none, we move on to our next item, which is 2E, reports from members on implementation and comprehension, conservation and management plan, our CCMP, goals and actions. So this is, if you have, if any of our members here have any updates on public engagement or tribal engagement as they relate to our CCMP. Any updates from anyone that you want to share at this time?
Can I just speak on the last item? Sorry, I didn't get my hand
sure.
up in time.
Oh, sorry. Yes, go ahead. Go ahead, Erica.
That's all right. No, I just really appreciate the videos and the images and the report, Tom, and all the work that you and your team have been doing. And I would love a copy of that. We love to share kind of inside our office as well, because we can't get down there very often. So thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you, Erica. And I think, is this something that can also be shared with the commission in case they want to share with anyone else that might be interested? Can we do that? Yes. All right, great. Thank you.
Yeah, typically our presentations are provided after the meetings in PDF format. I can look into what we can do to capture those videos. So, yeah, thanks.
Yes, Carrie?
I'll just provide a brief update on behalf of Heal the Bay, and especially since Tom highlighted the study looking at flow around the breakwater at Santa Monica Pier. So on Tuesday, we had the first meeting of the Santa Monica Pier Advisory Committee, which is a group that's convened by Heal the Bay and the City of Santa Monica to really try to figure out why Santa Monica Pier is has such high loads of bacteria. And so if people are interested in engaging in that group, feel free to let me know. But that was a first meeting, and then they'll be meeting over the subsequent months doing some more data analysis and also designing some additional studies to really try to understand the source of that bacteria and then moving forward to figure out some solutions.
Great. Thank you, Carrie, for that update. Jenny?
Thank you. I don't remember if I reported when this was released for public comment, but it's going before the board this next Thursday, there will be a permit for discharges of trash from non-point sources going to the board for their consideration. This permit, waste discharge requirements, is a continuation of the requirements under the existing waiver. So it carries over all the same requirements, but just puts it into a different type of permitting mechanism, and the board will be considering that next Thursday. It implements the Malibu Creek, Santa Monica Bay, Biona Creek trash TMDLs.
Great. Thank you, Jenny, for that update. Anyone else? All right. Now, thank you for those updates. We'll move on to the next set of items, which are governing board business. One is item 3A is consideration of approval of the October 16 meeting minutes. So at this time, there are no changes proposed by staff. And I do want to commend Luke and Cindy for the detailed minutes that they put together to ensure that our discussion and relevant information is not lost when we, it's part of, sometimes it is hard. I know the last few meetings we've been having a lot of discussion, but they did a great job in terms of summarizing and making sure that that gets memorialized in the minutes. So thank you, Luke and Cindy, for that. So any revisions? Hearing none, is there a motion? Oh, Marcela?
Can we please add Jenny Osmeña as an attendee for that meeting? It seems like she was missing on the meeting minutes. Thank you.
I will check on that. Okay. Looks like Genevieve is missing. Thank you. Thank you for.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Marcela. So is there a motion with Marcela's minor revision there to move approval of the minutes?
I'll move.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right, great. All right, Cindy, can we do roll call vote?
Yes, of course. Thank you, Chair. I will begin a roll call using a randomized order. When I call your name, please state your vote. And one moment while I share my screen. Michael Quill?
Yes.
Martha Tremblay?
Yes.
Erin Wilson-Olgan?
Yes.
Marcela Benavides?
Yes.
Rory Sky?
Yes.
Sabrina Ashton?
Yes.
Dean Francois?
Yes.
Aaron Orderer?
Yes.
Clark Stevens?
Abstain.
Lauren Salisbury?
Yes.
Greg Rochal?
Yes.
Jenny Newman?
Yes.
Dan Murphy?
Yes.
Andy Kordesky?
Yes.
Jacob Berman?
Yes.
Karen Mogis?
Yes.
Carrie Nichols?
Abstain.
The motion is approved. Chair, I recommend we move to the next item.
Great. Thank you, Cindy. And I guess in retrospect, maybe we could have tried being more efficient. But anyway, the next item is consideration of approval of the 2026 Governing Board meeting calendar. So, Luke, if you can put up the dates and.
Thank you, Chair. Pulling that up right now. So each year, the governing board needs to approve their meeting dates. Let me see if I could do something to get this zoomed in. Seems like I can't. sorry, it might appear a little small on your screen. I'm hoping you could still read it. The dates are February 19th, April 23rd, June 18th, August 20th, October 15th, December 10th. Most of these are going to be the third Thursday of the respective months, which is our typical practice. There are two changes to note. One is the December meeting would be the second Thursday of that month, which is what we typically do due to holidays at the end of that month. And then the April meeting, April 23rd, that is actually the fourth Thursday of April. And this came out of the executive committee meeting where they changed their March meeting date to the fourth Thursday of March. So to accommodate turnaround between those two meetings, the executive committee proposed having the April meeting be on the fourth Thursday. So any thoughts or concerns could be discussed now. And also the one thing to mention, the time for these meetings right now is set for 9:30 a.m. till 12 p.m. That could also be subject to change if folks thought that was necessary.
Any thoughts, questions, concern? Yes, Dean?
Yeah, I have a question. I noticed we use the Hyperion Center as well as the Yacht Club. Is it less expensive to have these meetings at the Hyperion Center? And if it is, could more be held at Hyperion Center instead of here?
Hyperion has been a great partner for us. They've hosted many meetings. The commission is restricted to venues that do not charge a fee for this commission. So that is definitely something I could look into. It would depend on their schedule, though. So, I mean, if we would like some more of these to take place at Hyperion, that's a possibility.
So there's no fee at Hyperion. There's a fee here, correct?
No. No fees at either for this commission. I can't speak on other types of events.
So the Delray Yacht Club provides this free of charge?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Yes, Sabrina?
I just wanted to note that the April meeting is our Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board meeting, so myself and Jenny will not be here, but that's completely fine to go forward. Just wanted to note that.
Yeah, and I guess depending on what you have on the agenda, we might lose other members, but I think...
That meeting is of importance. That is typically when the governing board approves of its annual work plan.
Okay. Okay. So is this something that maybe we can consider at the next board meeting if it becomes, or let's see, we meet the executive committee also will meet in between, or should we consider identifying a different date, or does it work for the majority of you all? Okay.
Which date was changed from the...
It would have been the April date would have been our tradition. Our date would be...
So we would usually have it in April when?
It would have been April 16th.
And the only reason you're moving it is just to make it a month later than the... I mean, is that really the reason for moving it?
Well, in terms of deliverables, and like Luke mentioned, we typically, that is the month where we consider important documents. And if there was any input from the executive committee or revisions that needed to be done, there was the consideration of providing enough time to make those revisions. So it's more the timing in terms of understanding that during that month, there are important documents that are going to be brought forward to the commission for the April meeting. So that was the thought behind that.
I will say administratively, we could make an April 16th meeting work, which would be the third Thursday of April. But again, this was just a recommendation that came from the executive committee meeting. So it's, we don't have to do what's displayed here.
Chair.
Yes.
And given that there are five Thursdays in that April, could also do it the Thursday after.
It's the 20th.
April 30th.
Like, wow, you're counting.
Correct.
You had that second cup of coffee, brother. That's
the lunar calendar.
I don't know why we just can't keep it on the third Thursday. And I mean, 1 week should make a difference.
Really. I think that is.
It's the third Thursday.
April 16th is where. Yeah, April is an interesting, there's a lot of Thursdays that month, but I think we can consider keeping our April 16th meeting in light that I would be concerned about losing two board members. So I would, if there is a motion, if board member Francois makes that motion, is there a second for that? And
I'll second.
All right.
I'll second.
Could we first get
sorry, can you please, my hand's been up. Sorry, what's the date of the board meeting, regional board four meeting? It's the 23rd or the 16th?
The April 23rd.
Okay. So you're moving it to the third.
So
Thursday,
the proposal is to keep it within the original. Our original date would be April 16th.
Okay. Can I ask a follow-up? How we have a big, I guess, deliverable year for the NEP, right? So you'll have a new CCMP. I just want to hear from staff how this works with timing and bringing documents forward. This is a bigger question. Is the idea that the final CCMP would come to the board in February, and then in April, we're only looking at the new work plan? Or are we looking at both?
Well, we can't predict
the best of your knowledge at this time.
So, Luke, I'll let you answer that one.
Yeah, and Tom, please feel free to chime in as well. Erica, as of right now, this will also be discussed later on in the agenda, but as of right now, we anticipate the revised draft of the action plan to be considered for approval in February 2026. If this calendar is approved, that would be February 19th. And then the work plan for 2027 would be provided to the executive committee in March, and then it would be considered for approval by the governing board in April.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying. I just was thinking sometimes more time is helpful. And of course, we want a regional board for folks to be able to attend this meeting too. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I was going to add some, but that's sufficient. Thanks.
And we need a clearer motion to vote on this calendar.
Okay, Eric, can you help us with that? You get our intent here.
Yeah, I think what we're looking for is a motion to adopt with the amendment from that April meeting from the 23rd to the 16th.
Yeah, that's my motion. Thank you.
Is there a second? I think Aaron seconded. Okay.
I'll second.
All right. Cindy, let's go ahead with roll call vote. Thank you for the discussion.
Thank you, Chair. Once again, we will be voting in a randomized order. When I call your name, please state your vote. Dean Francois?
Yes.
Jacob Berman?
Yes.
Karen Mogus?
Yes.
Clark Stevens?
Yes.
Carrie Nichols?
Yes.
Dan Murphy?
Yes.
Aaron Orderer?
Yes.
Aaron Wilson-Olgan?
Yes.
Marcela Benavides?
Yes.
Michael Quill?
Yes.
Rory Sky?
Yes.
Sabrina Ashton?
Yes, thank you.
Greg Rochal?
Yes.
Jenny Newman?
Yes.
Andy Korodesky?
Yes.
Lauren Salisbury?
Yes.
Martha Tremblay?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. The motion passes. I recommend we move to the next item.
Great. Thank you, Cindy. With that, our next set of items are informational items. The first one is a presentation on Southern California Coastal Water Research Project's Proposition 50 project. I think Eric Stein is here along with Christine Woodcraft. Welcome. I know this is a deliverable for your project, presenting this presentation to the commission. We really appreciate your great progress and are excited to hear about the work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, I'll provide a brief introduction. So to give folks some background on where this project is coming from. So in 2021, the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission Governing Board approved over $3 million in funding for six different projects. And SCWRP's project is the first one of these to wrap up. So that's really exciting. This project was aimed at filling crucial data gaps for small coastal wetlands, including assessing their vulnerability to sea level rise and other climate-related stressors. The main deliverable for this project is the first chapter of the State of the Bay report. And that report is the Commission's comprehensive report on ecosystem health around Santa Monica Bay. So in other words, this report tells us how good of a job we're doing. That last State of the Bay report was released 10 years ago. So it's been a while, and it's exciting to see what has changed. So presenting today, we have Eric Stein, our TAC vice chair from SCWRP, and Dr. Christine Woodcraft from CSU Long Beach. Take the floor.
Great. If you can bring up the slides, that'd be great.
Sorry, give me one moment on slides.
Great. You can go to the next slide, Luke. Thanks. Okay. Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here today to present the results of this work and the culmination of this first chapter of the State of the Bay Report. So as Luke mentioned, in 2015 was our last State of the Bay Report. It was published as a special issue of Urban Coast. And I've listed on the slide here the different habitat types that are covered within the State of the Bay Report. And so the coastal wetlands is the first chapter to be presented to you. You'll expect to see reports on the subsequent chapters moving forward. And one of the things that was really exciting is every time we do the State of the Bay Report, I think this is my third iteration on the State of the Bay Report, or maybe the fourth, I don't know, losing track of time. We kind of have a chance to kind of revision the process a little bit and continue to refine the process. And so I'll talk a little bit about the process we used for the wetlands chapter. And in discussions with the TAC, we expect similar processes will be used with the subsequent chapters. So you can go to the next slide. So I'm just a refresher because it has been about 10 years. In 2015, we looked at habitat extent, vulnerability, structure, and disturbance, and biological response. That was kind of the organization. We restructured a little bit to simplify that structure slightly, and so I'll present that in the last slide. But we continued the trend of looking at indicators of status, kind of health or condition, and then trying to do some trends and assessing our confidence in the information. In the past report, as many of you may know, there is not sort of dedicated funding that goes directly with producing the State of the Bay report, so we try to be creative and leverage existing resources. And in this case, we were very fortunate because we have some funding to support these chapters. But typically what we do is we look for other monitoring and other data sets that are available that we can use and leverage that to address, to answer the questions about the State of the Bay. So in 2015, we were somewhat limited in that we had two systems where we had comparable data sets that we could draw from, and that was Malibu and Biona. So a lot of the inferences we made in the 2015 State of the Bay report were based on those limited data sets that we had at those two systems where we had ongoing data collection occurring. So we go to the next slide. So as we look to update into the 2025 report, as Luke already mentioned, when we put together the proposal for this project, we made a conscious decision to focus on collecting data to fill in some of the data gaps for systems that we previously had not monitored and are typically not as we don't pay as much attention to. And we know that of the estuaries within the bay, The vast majority of those are made up of small lagoonal and small creek mouth systems, and we typically don't have a lot of information on those systems. So we made a decision in this report to focus our energy on filling in some of that knowledge gap around some of those smaller systems that we typically haven't looked at in the past. And so in combination with that, because we concurrent with this process going forward, the state of California has been developing some statewide programs to develop estuaries. It gave us the opportunity to take advantage of those efforts, leverage those by using some of the same protocols and data collection methods, and so we could kind of actually get more bang for the buck. So it was sort of a dual goal of focusing on those previously underrepresented systems and taking advantage of systems where we had ongoing, consistent monitoring data that we could draw from to have these data-informed conclusions. So the five systems that we looked at, you can see here, right? So, and I'll talk about those again. We have Topanga, Zuma, Arroyo Sequeet, Malibu, and which is Big Sycamore, thank you, because I can't see the names that far. But so I'm showing you these five here. These are the five that we had been monitoring through the statewide and regional programs, so you can see a sense of those. And just call your attention that, again, with the exception of Malibu, most of these are smaller lagoonal or creek mouth systems. Most of them close to the tides seasonally, so they have a berm that closes them off to the tides, which changes kind of the structure and function of those systems, and several are intermittently dry in during parts of the year. So these are sort of systems that we haven't really studied the condition of these in great extent in the past, and so this gave us a great opportunity to better understand these types of systems, which make up the majority of systems in the bay. Next slide. So here's our process. So this is a process where we have expert panel, as with a previous State of the Bay reports. For each habitat type, we convene a panel of experts with expertise within that habitat type, and they go through a process of using their best professional judgment informed by the data that we have available. So in this case, you can see we thank the folks. In addition to Christina and myself, we had Brenton Spees, Rosie Daggett, Rich Ambrose, and Karina Johnston, and that made up our expert panel. I want to give a big shout out. We asked these people for approximately two mostly day meetings, which turned into five mostly day meetings, and lots of intervening work in between. These folks all volunteered their time to help us with this process, so we thank them for going above and beyond to help us put this report together. But we went through this process where we went through and agreed on what are the metrics and the indicators that we want to use. We had a lot of iterative discussion to develop kind of a structured process, which I'll show you in terms of how we evaluate condition. Then we had the experts use just their best professional judgment to score the condition of these wetlands based on that kind of structured framework that we put together. Then that was sort of just based on judgment. We then gave them all of the data that we had processed, that we had collected from these systems. And then with the benefit of that data, we had them rescore to see, you know, how did their data-informed perceptions alter based on just their best professional judgment. And then we went through a series of iterative discussions where people talked about why they scored things the way they did, what were the basis of the differences. And through that iterative process, we were able to get to a consensus about what are the conditions. So this sort of data-informed best professional judgment is a process that's routinely used in an assessment. But in this case, we had great ability to reach consensus among the experts. And so then we'll go through a little bit of kind of what that led to, and then Christine will show you some of the results. All right, so we part of that process, as I said, we restructured the organization a little bit around extent, conditions, stressors, and management considerations. We scored all of the indicators on a 1 to 5 scale, including some estimations of what level of confidence we had in those scores. And then, again, as I said, we assigned that by high, medium, low confidence, and then we assessed trends based on best professional judgment. In a perfect world, we would have repetitive data measurement at these systems over time. We're hoping that in the future we can repeat this the next cycle of the State of the Bay, but because we don't have that time series of data, the trends assessment was largely based on the best professional judgment and the experience of our expert panel, which have decades and decades of experience working in these systems. So next slide. I don't expect you to see all of this detail, but you will have the slides. The main point I wanted to make, and I'm going to give you two subsequent slides with which give you a little bit more blow up of these. But I just wanted to point out that this process, one of the things that was really important and why it took us so many extra meetings is the way this table is organized is we have a series of sort of functions that we've identified, what we think are the predominant functions and stressors that are affecting these systems. And then for each of them, we talked about what are the metrics that we actually measure in the field that contribute to those functions. So how do the field measurements relate to our ability to say something about the function of these systems? And then kind of what is the algorithm or how can these metrics be combined to produce an overall score? So that process is really important because it actually provides a level of sort of transparency of what is the thought process that goes into how you make these scores. So it's not just I'm pulling a number out of the air, but I'm using the data in an informed way. So it creates that transparency and hopefully the repeatability over time when we go to replicate this process in the future. It also helps us see where our data gaps are and where the data sets that we have are lacking and can inform future monitoring efforts. So I'll just go through the next. I'm not going to talk about these except to show you this is a blow-up of the condition ones, and you can look at those. And the next one is the stressors and the management consideration, just to give you a little bit more detail. All right, next slide. All right, so a couple of caveats and refinements as we went through this. As we went through the process, as I said, we have those algorithms which represent sort of our best conceptual understanding of how we think these systems work. In some cases, we made some adjustments because we just didn't have sufficient data to fully score those, and so we wanted to retain the full concept, but also recognize that in some cases they had to be modified based on available data. We also always think about how do we contextualize the Santa Monica Bay wetlands across the Southern California region as a whole. A lot of that was done with just best professional judgment because we don't have quite enough data for the region as a whole yet to make that broad contextualization. We're hoping that, again, over time, as the state and regional programs continue to mature, that we'll have that data set to be able to do that more data-driven contextualization. Also, as we'll come back a couple times and talk about, we have some stressor data, but because stress, as Tom pointed out in his presentation, stress occurs oftentimes unpredictably and at intervals that we're not out in the field. And there's these ongoing patterns over time that to fully understand the impact of these stressors, we are probably going to need to spend a lot more attention and thought in terms of how we monitor those stressors and really understand the impacts on the system. And then lastly, because these systems are quite different, we organize them into different categories so that we're sort of not doing an apples to oranges comparison. And so the small seasonal systems are being compared to other small seasonal systems and larger systems to larger systems. So we have those categorized. Next slide, Luke. This is my last slide, and I'll turn it over to Christine first, the fun part of the data. But I just wanted to give you some general impressions. We asked the expert panel when we finally released them from their servitude. We asked them for some general impressions. And the one on the top was sort of their resounding statement that they really enjoyed the process, and they were really pleased that they were able, they said you put five scientists in a room, you get six opinions, right? They came from very different perspectives, but they were able to really converge on some nice consensus, and they were all felt really gratified by that process. They also felt that the time that was invested in developing that big table I showed you was well spent because it really forced a discussion of, like, how do we actually conceptually think that these things should be evaluated based on the data availability. And then, as I said, the ability to continue to look at trends and change over time, particularly in things like climate change, and the ability to broadly contextualize these systems will rely on a commitment to continuing to monitor these systems over time to collect the data necessary to answer those broader questions. So that's all kind of set up on the process, and I'm going to turn over to Christine, who will actually talk about some of the results and findings.
Thanks, Eric, and thanks for the opportunity to show you part of our process for this chapter. I'm going to turn to thinking about what both data went into our assessment and a little bit of what the results are. And the first category you noticed on our tables was this idea of extent. And the reason that extent is important is not only to understand the type of estuaries that we're talking about, but the context of the Santa Monica Bay. So when we were doing the extent metrics, because that was more of a GIS and desktop exercise, we were able to think about the 18 estuaries that might make up the Santa Monica Bay. And that helps with context. So here's just an image showing those 18 estuaries and the type of wetlands in the lower left-hand corner, or what we call their archetype. So how are these distributed between the larger estuaries that we were talking about and the smaller ones that may be seasonally opening and closing? Next slide, Luke. And in addition, using data and lots of help from staff and scientists at SQRP, we looked at what we had historically in terms of habitat distribution, which is that pie chart on the left, and then what we have currently in terms of habitat distribution in Santa Monica Bay. And it's not surprising that our habitat distribution has changed. That's the story of wetlands globally, but it is a really important metric to have included in these reports, because at the end of the day, not only does the condition matter, but the amount of wetlands that we have and the distribution of the habitats within those wetlands dramatically affect and help us interpret the next indicator and functions that come out as part of the condition assessment. So these type of metrics give us the broader scale, but then we also have, and it will be available in the report, the summaries of the data on each function and the summaries of where we scored them on those functions. However, to stick within our time limit, this is the last real data side I'm going to show you, and we'll go to the next one. Where we talk primarily about the scores as a result of the process Eric explained to you. So what you see on these graphics are the five estuaries that we evaluated across the bottom of the x-axis and the assigned panel scores on the y-axis. The darker color is the first round. The lighter blue color was the second round of scoring. Now, when we set this up, the idea was that if we shared with the expert panel all the data we had collected to make a data-informed scoring, that we might see our expert panel converge on less variable scores. And what you'll see in this graphic is that the exact opposite happened. What we ended up finding was that when we provided data to the expert panel, it changed what they might have thought of their expectation. Now, at the base level, that's what we would like. We want a data-informed process to alter and inform people's best professional judgment. But then your question might be, well, how did you get back to consensus? And this is where you heard that Eric said we asked them about, you know, two more full day meetings of their time. Because we really had to dive into where did the scores become more variable by their scoring. And that meant talking about what the data had told them, where that altered with their expectations, and seeing where consensus could come up. And if you go to the next slide. We then, you can see, added this consensus scoring as the third dot on this chart. And this was a process where people said, I saw your fish graphic and realized that the overall fish I thought should be in the system had a non-native present. Or that I looked at the extent of plants within the estuary and it does not align with what I thought from the last time I went out there. So what we were able to do was then discuss, well, how does that align with what we would expect that type of estuary to contain, or how we would expect it to perform? So at the end of the day, our take home about the process was that the data and available data on the right indicators and metrics was essential to making sure that our best professional judgment process was the best reflection of the conditions, both in the past and now. So those consensus scores will have a lot more information in the report, but we thought what was useful to contextualize for you today was how did we get to those scores. Next slide. This is the type of figure we'll be producing in the report with our overall condition assessment. Again, you'll see the class of wetland that Eric discussed divided into three. So we have our small, seasonally dry lagoons, Big Sycamore and Arroyo Siquit, our sandy beach, typically wet lagoons of Zuma and Topanga, and our larger lagoon of Malibu Canyon. We have an overall condition score, which was, again, that consensus score that was on the last slide from our experts, and then a trend indicator. How did we think this related to the time frame of the report, which is from 2015 until now? And then what notes did we think either gave us information about stressors or why that score was occurring? So we can see that in general, and I'll break this down a little bit, the five estuaries have three that we viewed to have an average score. And for the most part, without management actions, they've been at that point. Whereas we have Zuma and Malibu, which have experienced restoration activities and management actions, and those were viewed as doing relatively well and having improved since those management actions were taken post-2015. Now, an important caveat that we've already heard a little bit about from the public and from Tom is that this does stop with an evaluation in sort of 2023 and 2024 data. What happened in January of 2025 within the region in terms of the fires is a stressor that is not captured in this data set. And so we have a note that regionally, while we do, and I'll talk about this in the future, we do know that there are stressors like wildfire that we have to evaluate and we'll see change in the next reports. Next slide. And this reflects, I should have had you go 2 seconds sooner to my next slide, but this reflects that discussion I was just having, that across, again, those five estuaries, we attempted to quantify in terms of high, moderate, and low, where we saw the stressors impacting these systems. The stressors likely to affect future conditions are those we've seen affect the trends from now, including recent fires like the three listed there. Constrainment or confinement of the inlet, so their connection to the ocean. Extended dry periods as a result of predicted climate change and excessive human vegetation all present large challenges for these estuaries that are likely to influence their condition and trends in the future. Next slide. And then we really wanted to take a more granular approach to that overall condition score so that we asked the experts to do the same process where we assigned a condition, a trend per each function. Those functions are on the left-hand column, trophic food web support, nursery habitat provision, breeding and forage function for birds, habitat structure complexity, vegetation community, and sea level rise amelioration. And they're scored by the estuary going across the top. One note is that every estuary may not be expected to perform the same functions in the same ways, and that's why we group them. But we would like to see, you know, the general trends increasing in all of them and the condition improving through time. There's lots more discussion around this, but this is the type of graphic that will be in the report that hopefully break down the overall score into really important functional scores. Next slide. We also wanted to make sure that when we had condition scores that we could get the opinion of expert panels and literature indicate what was driving those scores. This brings us to the discussion of stressors. Both in the words on the right-hand side and in the function table, you again see all those functions on the left and the estuary stressors across the top. And it highlights in red the potential. Well, stressors that have potential management actions connected to them that are lowering the overall score in red. Again, ones that are sort of remaining neutral are in yellow, and we do have some improvements in terms of effective restoration and retreat room planning. Next slide. So what are our key findings from these results and through the process that Eric described to you? There is a real challenge is that a lack of systematic stressor assessment means that our, you know, and conducted at the correct time frame when these are occurring, means that we can't make as informed management decisions and restoration recommendations unless we're capturing the impact and occurrence of those stressors. We do know that upstream effects in the watershed, as well as inlet status management, mouth management, are also key drivers. We know that fire impacts, as I alluded to, are going to be large in these systems and need to be considered in a way potentially they haven't been historically. But we also know that the management actions that have been taken in the Santa Monica Bay region are having positive effects on the condition of many of these systems. But that the estuaries that are remaining in our yellow category with the horizontal trends are not likely to stay there unless we direct attention to management of those systems. Next slide. So future recommendations, and these will again be spelled out in more detail, but we think that the use of these structured indices is very important for making sure that we can understand the condition within the systems and that we have these very defined data-based and algorithm-based condition gradients. Recommendations, particularly around stressors and some of the more continuous variables, are to enhance the frequency and the resolution of how we monitor. Again, the attention to fire is particularly relevant both from the ecological and the social perspective in these systems. And we'd love all of this work and expert time and opinion to feed into our understanding of how we best do these assessments. We tried a lot of approaches with our very willing expert panel, and we'd like to see them move to other chapters, but then be considered as part of how a framework for assessment takes place both in this region and across the state. And that is it.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much for the very informative presentation. Are there any questions from any members on the presentation? I know that there is one request for public comment on this item, so we can go ahead and take that, and then if you have any questions, we can do that. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. We have one request for public comment on this item. Walter Lamb, you have 3 minutes, and I know you registered under 2 items, so just keep in mind this 3 minutes has to cover you for those 2 items. Could we unmute Walter Lamb, the participant, please? Thanks for being patient, everyone. Walter, you should be allowed to speak now. Thank you.
Good morning, Walter Lambano Wetlands Land Trust. It sounded like the explanation at the beginning for why the Biono Wetlands was not included in this chapter for I think the first time ever is that it was that the grant was limited to small estuaries. I did see that Malibu was about 110 acres was still included. And I think the State of the Bay report is meant to be something that helps track progress over time. That's one of the reasons that it was a little concerning that there just wasn't one in 2020. But now, 10 years after the last one, to have by far and away the largest coastal wetland in the Santa Monica Bay watershed not included would seem to be a pretty big data gap. I can understand wanting to study the smaller ones, but then to not have the biggest one, I'm just wondering if you can provide a little more input on that as to why how that is not causing there to be sort of a data gap in the trend analysis of the bay to have that missing. Thank you.
Thank you, Walter.
So, Eric, I do have a question in terms of maybe related to Biona, and then I understand that you all use existing data sets. And so if you can address in terms of the exclusion of that, and I'm sorry if I missed it, but one of the things I did want to ask you, since you are familiar with the BITE program, this is something the SCORP that several of our board members here are also a part of. Is there any data collected as part of that program near Biona? That's my question.
Yes. Yeah. So there's kind of two related questions. So the reason Biona was not included was sort of exactly what Walter said, in a sense, because it is a data gap, right? We relied on a data-informed, best professional judgment, and it was really important because we're looking across systems that we have sort of comparable data sets using the standard protocols that have been developed for the state and the region to inform this process. And so, unfortunately, we actually don't have that for Biona. There is some monitoring that goes on at Biona that's related to that particular project, but it's not currently being monitored in the way, using the standard protocols and methods that are consistent across the region. So I think that in the future it would be great if those protocols could be applied to Biona, then we would actually have the data that we could use to include that in future assessments. And so I think that would be a great thing moving forward. And then in relation to the question on the BITE, the BITE 23, the BITE Regional Monitoring Program, which did include an estuary element for the second time this cycle, that did those data were basically leveraged for this assessment. So many of the systems that we evaluated in the State of the Bay report were also included in the BITE program, not all of them. We supplemented them through this process, but we, as we typically do, we leverage the efforts in the BITE program to use a lot of the data that's collected through the BITE regional monitoring to inform the ability to do this assessment. And again, as those of you are familiar with the BITE program know, we revisit the BITE program every 5 years, and so our hope is that in future BITE cycles we'll continue to be able to include an estuary element so that we can continue to do this.
Okay, Eric, and if there is an estuary element in the BITE program, it could include Biona?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any questions, comments, Aaron?
Just a comment, if there was some data or something that you wanted to collect, could you let me know or us know or something? So I would welcome that kind of data collection.
Yeah, absolutely, Aaron. And we already work with some of your managers at, say, for example, Bolsa Chica, which I know is not within Santa Monica Bay, but at some of the CDFW reserves, we work with some of your managers to incorporate those protocols.
Great, thank you. Any other questions, comments?
So I just wanted to point out that if this team was an MBA team, they'd have the highest payroll of all. Great to see five, or was it five? I think it was five. That's the basketball analogy. Get together with that many years of expertise and the range of zones of expertise within that whole watershed system. I wanted to maybe bring it back to how Tom had opened it with the fire scene and just mentioned that it's pretty instructive. At the RCD, we had one very dramatic response to wildfire, which was moving all of the endangered fish out before the fire came there just days later. And had we not done that, it's very clear that that wasn't just hyperbole, that we've been really kind of having trouble getting across in some of our regulatory frameworks how important it is to have a plan for rescue when our fish are at such limited numbers. And yes, they are the most adaptable species of salmonid that we have, but that's a numbers game, right? You get down to 2 minutes and one major event could be it, right? We can't expect them to return from the ocean magically and repopulate any of these systems until we get the numbers back up. And I'll say that's important and possible. The other thing I wanted to bring it back together, the fire, is one less dramatic system response to that wildfire is we just finished redesigning the alluvial bar kind of system in the lagoon, Topanga Lagoon restoration, in response to not only that fire, but because of the major flood and erosion event we had, the latter being a bad thing, the one before being a very good thing in some ways, completely reconnected part of the stream with its floodplain that hadn't been connected before, but and seeing that had opportunities with the grading plan, so we just had to redo everything a little bit. And what I will say is that wildfires have been here for a long time, and if you look at the aerial data record for Topanga, and I'm sure this is true other places, despite filling, despite these variability events, development, the structure in that estuary kind of bar right, alluvial system keeps reappearing in the same place. So we treated the roots like the trees, even though the trees, many of them were burned, and good portion may not come back. If you look from the 20s forward, they always come back in the roughly the same place. That pattern emerges. So it's very interesting to see the stability within a variable system that's there. Last thing I'll say about fire, which I think is important to get out here, is that one of our staff just sent this to me. We do wildfire. We're now calling it wind fire. We don't have a wildfire problem. We have a wind fire problem. So after more than 15 years of working on this at the RCD, Keeley and Seifert, names you may know, I don't know how many hundreds of publications over their careers they have together and independently, just published on Monday a statement. This is a quote from their latest publication released Monday. Area burned is a function of human ignitions during extreme wind event conditions. On these landscapes, fire is a human ignition problem and not so much a fuel or climate problem. So we're a non-regulatory organization. We have no authority. We have to charm people to listen to us and to get funding. But this is what we're seeing more and more. We can do more at home. We'll continue to do that. But in urban conflagration, it's a lot easier to prevent the initial ignition, given that there's only a few days a year where a Palisades, I mean, Woolsey, that name all kinds of fires. There's only a few days a year where those can happen. We know where they're going to start if they're going to destroy communities. So it'd be a lot easier to handle that than to figure out how to not be the first home to ignite in an urban context, because once that happens, it's radiant within 30 feet. The only homes that survive in the alphabet streets were homes that had at least 30 feet of separation on three frontages. It's the only common factor spatially for all of those homes that survived in the alphabet streets, just taking that similar pattern in Eaton. So from our perspective as a bay protecting entity that's dealing with wind fire, there's some uniforms and badges at the table, and I just got to say that we can't go there, but somebody needs to go there on public access and land use.
Great. Thank you.
We have a hand raised online.
No, sure.
Chair. Erica.
Thank you, and appreciate the presentation and getting to see it and listen a second time. So just, I wanted to tie it back to the forthcoming, the CCMP that we're working on, and just, you know, there's question marks for, let me find the exact section, sorry. I think it's activity 4.1.6, monitor coastal wetlands and lagoons, and just, I guess, a request to tie back and think about costs for monitoring and to have that reflected in the document. I know no money specifically, you know, comes with the CCMP. I mean, there is the annual grant to the NEP from EPA, but I think that would just be really helpful to understand kind of what it would take to keep this monitoring effort going. Great. Thank you.
Yeah, and thanks, Erica. I'll say that fortunately, just last week, the Wetland Recovery Project Directors Group approved the Southern California Regional Estuary Monitoring Program, so we actually have those cost estimates that were developed in hand, so we can easily provide those because we've just gone through that exercise. And then maybe just quickly, Clark, a huge shout out to Rosie Daggett, who was just a hero on all of those efforts that you mentioned. So.
Yep, quick. Thank you again, Christine and Eric. Appreciate it very much. Certainly helps us focus our attention on different systems and understanding their needs as to what we can create through management, as well as what the science tells us is maybe, hopefully, improving their condition and their extent. Eric and Christine both have been chasing down other funds. Been happy to help support those efforts as moving forward. So we do hope we keep tackling that issue. But to maybe just try to tie this together a little bit quickly, right? Riparian corridors that are healthy, the trees can serve as something that helps slow the spread of wildfires. you tie that in with more aggressive communications and work to try to suppress what may start in an urbanized wild interface. I think that's one way to go. We anticipate that the Las Virgenes Triunfo Water Management District will stop discharging effluent to Malibu Creek sometime between now and 2032 as our CCMP captures. That will likely have impacts on Malibu Lagoon, Malibu Creek, and we're going to want to take a look at those. So there's, that is an example of a episodic event that we can actually zoom in on temporally in time and get something going there. Topanga is going to be a tremendous opportunity to see what that restoration effort puts forth. So I think that those are a couple markers that I'm certainly interested in trying to pursue with this, where there be something that's tangible for us to keep moving forward and really apply the data that you're generating to help us with some smart moves. Thanks again, guys. Great stuff.
Thank you. Thank you, Eric, Christine. Let's move on to our next item. And we would be right on time. And this is where we had the request to have the item 4C regarding the discussion of the draft action plan before the discussion of the resolution. So, Luke, can you identify maybe the time period that we have to work on so that we have some time to discuss the resolution?
Yes. So originally we had about 40 minutes set aside to discuss the action plan. So if we wrap up item, if we jump to 4C now and we wrap that up around 11:40.
That would be great.
We should have enough time.
Great. All right.
So for AGP folks, we are on item 4C, and then we are going to jump back to 4B. So just wanted to point that out. Thank you. I will get us started here. I have a brief presentation for you all, and then I'm going to hand it over to Tom. The discussion we're going to have today is regarding the updated version of the draft action plan, which was provided to you all and also posted online a week and a half ago. So there have been changes to that draft action plan that was released earlier in the summer. So again, this is intended to review those changes with you and answer any questions that you may have about it. What I'm going to do now is just give you a brief overview, bring you up to speed, make sure, you know, jog your memory a little bit, and then I will hand it over to Tom to provide those updates. So again, I know you've probably seen this more times than you'd like. We are just discussing one component of the CCMP, and that is the CCMP action plan, which really is the document that is the heart of the CCMP because it identifies all the goals and actions and activities that this governing board or this commission plays. There are other documents under the CCMP umbrella. To provide some examples, the finance plan, which outlines funding strategies to implement the action plan. Then there's the memorandum of understanding, which outlines the governance structure. And that was the most recently updated component to the CCMP. So I have that bolded here. And then I'll also point out the comprehensive monitoring plan, since that just came up during the discussion of our last item. That comprehensive monitoring plan lays out strategies for measuring how successful we are. So that's where we lay out monitoring strategy for seeing if our wetlands are healthy, seeing if our management decisions are working. So just wanted to point those few things out, and I'll keep things moving along because we don't have much time. So I'm going to bring you up to speed on what was discussed at the last governing board meeting, just very briefly. We also had a discussion at the executive committee meeting in November, so I'll give a brief overview of what was discussed there. Then I will hand things over to Tom Ford. So back in October, with this group, we were at Hyperion. We discussed the previous draft action plan, and during that discussion, there was broad support for retaining previous goal language, which is more action-oriented. We discussed enhancing socioeconomic benefits and workforce development and how those elements should be incorporated into the draft action plan. And we also discussed development of a of goal six, which is regarding extreme event prevention, preparation, and response. And it sounded like there was a need to take some time to identify actions and activities that this commission could commit to and identify a sort of niche that this commission could play in that space. We also discussed a bit about how the 2018 actions, the 2018 action plan actions, were incorporated into the draft document. So the Bay Foundation provided an appendix that had a brief explanation for how those items were incorporated. Members have asked for additional context regarding the incorporation of those actions. So staff are currently working on that, and there will be additional context provided, additional materials provided ahead of a vote. And members also asked for the retention of certain 2018 actions, one example being MPA monitoring. So there were some actions that were not retained from that 2018 draft or 2018 plan, but were asked to be put back into the draft. Next, wanted to give an overview of what the executive committee discussed. The executive committee continued that discussion of how 2018 actions were incorporated into the draft action plan. And the executive committee did a more in-depth discussion on this particular action. So 2018 Action 28, Support for Disadvantaged Communities. In that Appendix A that was provided by the Bay Foundation, they identified these activities from the draft that are ways in which the commission supports disadvantaged communities. So this was a discussion there. During that discussion, it was recommended that commission members look for additional activities that could be added to this list. So this is something that will come up later in this meeting when we discuss the resolution, but so it's something we can come back to today, but just giving you an overview of what was discussed at the last meeting. There was also a brief discussion on recommendations for new activities or actions for the draft action plan. So I'll just list them. There were some recommendations to put more water quality monitoring projects in the draft action plan. Recommendation to have aquaculture policy as well as CEC policy included in that draft. There's a giant black sea bass project, trash cleanups, outreach and education projects. And then the three at the bottom of this table did not have an SMBRC member identified to be a partner or lead in them, but these were actions and activities mentioned in member comment. So there was a recommendation to include in-stream flow protection, denitrification efforts, and also support community restoration efforts in Biona. However, just pointing it out once again, no lead or partner who's also a commission member was identified for each of those items. Finally, the executive committee discussed a timeline for potential adoption of the draft action plan and also discussed a additional public comment period. So it was recommended that a additional public comment period be provided for this updated draft since it is significantly different from the last draft. That written public comment period will run for 3 weeks from December 12th, that is tomorrow, until January 2nd. And then it was discussed that the governing board could anticipate adoption or consider adoption in February 2026. I will now hand things over to Tom And Tom, please let me know if you'd like anything displayed.
I appreciate that, Luke. And it may help if we can pull up that sort of summary aggregate table of the goals, actions, and activities so I can hopefully keep track with what you just shared and direct folks to the changes that we made in response to the comments received in August and throughout the fall thus far. And thank you, everybody, for leaning in on that. While Luke's queuing that up, perhaps commensurate with, that's the correct term, this public comment period, there are some information that we would love to receive to inform this report. And in many cases, that is estimated costs for some of the actions or activities that are identified in this report. A lot of those around the pure water programs that we've identified, and I'm sure that for some folks that might be a very challenging number to produce. Please provide a range. I don't wish for anybody to feel like I can't give you that number. I don't know where it's going to be. We're going to start the work, and then it's going to, you know, contingency is going to be blown, and then we're 35% over budget. We're trying to just get this into a realm of understanding so that we can convey to the EPA and other folks, you know, what the level of investment is in this program within this community to advance this work. I've shared this with this body many times. This is going back to the, you know, the revision, the reauthorization of the Clean Water Act in 1987. You know, this 1, 2, 3, 4 are what this management conference is directed to try to accomplish in order for the EPA to then provide us support to keep this program running. We're looking at water quality, natural resources. I don't wish to read this off. Characterize and assess data on toxics, nutrients, pulling out the highlights, potential uses of the zone, water quality and natural resources. The next slide, if we can go there. Oh, thanks, Cindy. recommending priority corrective actions. And we talked about it today with the wetlands work, you know, the restoration work that's been conducted in Malibu and other places may have been providing some beneficial results that are good for shellfish, fish and wildlife, and recreational activities in the estuary. I would submit that there's a lot of recreation in this program that we speak past. Beach visitorship, coastal access are key priorities, and a number of those projects that we're engaged with LA County Beaches and Harbors, many other jurisdictions. Thank you, Marcella. I've taken that term and applied it broadly across the landscape is to make sure that the recreational access and the benefits to the community are realized. Recurring extreme weather events, fires, sea level rise, increased storminess, increased droughts. There is a list of terms that we're working with that are responsive to the Protect and Restore America's Estuaries Act, which came through, speaking off of memory, so a little bit of liability here, 2 or 3 years ago through the Congress that are pointing us at working on specific sorts of stressors that we may experience and that we are expected to identify those stressors and what of our actions may be vulnerable to those or what are we doing to make things better that push back against that. Again, an example would be putting dunes on beaches to try to reduce coastal flooding and erosion relative to sea level rise and increased storminess. Next slide, please. There's your list. Warmer summers, warmer winters, warmer waters, increasing drought, increasing storminess, sea level rise, and ocean acidification. And I would submit that there's a lot that this body collectively can do to work on adapting to drought, storminess, sea level rise, and ocean acidification. Our work collectively on generic warming patterns is something that happens at a scale that's far greater than us, but I think, again, we can point to some of the successes here in the state of California as well as locally to deal with emissions. All right, next slide. Keep going. I spoke to this one already. I want to make sure I'm not hogging the mic. Here we are, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. habitat restoration, water quality and availability, community education, monitoring and method development, technical collaboration and policy support, and extreme events and emergency response preparation. So these are the six high order items that we feel like we should be going after. Many of these were inherent in the 2018 plan, but they were often conflated or woven together, and I was reporting out, conducting monitoring, restoring, and conducting community education on behalf of the NEP in some actions, and then in others there was no comparable level of work. And I think as we really dove into this, we were like, hey, there's a big difference between collecting data and then reporting on the data and then working with others to help make that data do some work to help drive it forward. So we really thought that this helped separate things, make it easier for us to convey to everybody what exactly it is we're doing, and then track the progress towards getting to this, to endpoints that will help us funnel into our annual work plan development and demonstrate progress towards the goals and actions that we're establishing. Next slide, please. Look at that. You're going to love reading that one. sorry, I couldn't make it any bigger. What I'm trying to use this table is to guide me to point to you where we, I think, have made some adjustments and added activities in certain places, or then if you don't see something showing up here that you're like, hey, I talked about this, where did it go? I can help fill in the blanks. Hey, look, that's cool, spotlight. But there was, as we moved through this, the consideration for efforts to help recover giant black sea bass in this area were brought up. So we added that effort here. Moving down, I don't suspect much else changed under this activity. So if we could move from goal one to goal two, please. Let's spotlight dance that one too. That's great. You just mentioned, Luke, that interest in trying to describe or document increased monitoring for water quality efforts by Waterkeeper Heal the Bay, right? I think that fits under 2.1.1. If it doesn't, let's please have a sidebar, get it over to me as to why that doesn't work, and we'll see if there's another place that we can fit it in. Much of the other activities that you see here are about more brick-and-mortar type elements of trying to work on water quality issues, water availability issues, and we specifically point under Activity 2.2 to a number of these really unbelievable scale efforts that are happening in this region to make sure that we're protecting the water quality as well as making water available to us in the future. Next slide. A lot of changes under two over the past several months. We can go to number three. Fantastic. All right. Not a whole lot of changes here other than activity 3.3.3, which I think the communications around that actually helped us very much with goal number six, that we haven't really felt confident that we have done a great job engaging with tribal interests in our region, and that we've been just, let's do it. Okay, how about we start at step one and we start to develop a plan for how we're going to do that. So that is what 3.3.3 indicates. So we imagine trying to pull together a ad hoc work group committee. We'll have to figure out what the language on that is to make sure that we're doing it properly procedurally so we can get folks around a table and help us figure out how we're going to do outreach and make sure that we're getting to folks. That's in addition to the work that's already happening with the Covunga Village Springs, which I think is a terrific program. Next slide, please. Under four, this one I think is fairly straightforward. It is the many habitats that we're interested in, but comments around the table where, hey, marine protected areas needs to be back in the loop. We had not had that in there, so we added that, and we also made sure that the artificial reefs that may be developed in the region are also specifically called out here because they can serve multiple purposes. Almost there, Martha?
Can you remind us what the name of this is?
Could you use those microphones, please?
Yes. What is the, okay, so this is monitoring and method development. So this one is tied to monitor. So can I ask a question about the dunes and why do dunes not show up here?
The dunes don't show up as in monitoring sand dunes, but monitoring sandy shores. Eric was in the room back in the day when we tried to figure out what were the proper terms here. You know, it's just, there's a rocky intertidal. People don't think of our beaches as a sandy intertidal environment, but they are. And there's many ways that we monitor sandy shores. I would think the beach water quality monitoring could also be a place where we're like, hey, this is an important use of this region. We should tie monitoring for water quality, for public health and environmental impacts under monitoring sandy shores. So it's not just dunes.
Okay, so this is where, one, I am not knowledgeable on all this, but when I felt like, well, we're dropping dunes, but really it's incorporated there. So this is where maybe for you, as you look at it that way, maybe think of kind of like perspective where people think we're dropping it, where really we're not, but maybe adding a little bit more in terms of what is included or some verbiage in the action plan in there that says previously we had dunes, but technically dunes are sandy shore, part of sandy shores or something like that. And I think you probably did that in other areas, and maybe that'll, you'll address some of my comments that way. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that because I guess I'm not knowledgeable about this, and in reviewing, I'm going check by check, you know, line by line in terms of so that things don't get dropped. But no, thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
I think that was a very good comment, noted, and I'll make sure that it's in there as well as continue to apply that thinking elsewhere across the document. So thank you, Martha. I think we can move on. Not a whole lot here other than what I spoke to, that for us in tracking our progress and displaying to Erica, who reviews our activities on a six-month basis as well as works with us week in, week out, trying to make sure that we are making best use of the resources and support that she can help provide, really getting after the fact that there's a lot of work that happens after the job's done around here with the results that we may produce from a given effort, and making sure that, hey, you know, lessons learned, good news, bad news, making sure that we're helping advance the state of the art or the state of the science elsewhere when it comes to this work. We wanted to call that out distinctly because it otherwise gets lost in the traffic, I think, similarly to what Martha was describing about dunes getting lost under sandy shores. So this goal came about of, we got to talk, we've got to write, we've got to communicate. And on to the last one.
Sorry, Tom, yeah. We could definitely follow up on this, but activity 5.1.2, yeah. Could public health be included in that? Or
check public health, public access and recreational activities?
Just a consideration, we could talk later.
I'm making a note. I don't see why not, sir. Okay. Thank you for that, Luke. And number six, this one also went through some dramatic changes since it was first presented to you all in August, where we had developed out a number of activities that we were going to undertake. But it was a largely paper exercise. It was looking around at other emergency preparedness organizations, which we acknowledge we are not. And we started putting those in, hoping that essentially we were going on a fishing expedition and that we might actually find some information. So similar to what I talked about with tribal engagement, what we recognize and what's already been addressed today and in past meetings, there's a role here that we can play to help with folks with developing an emergency action plan by perhaps pulling in resources from other existing emergency efforts, folks that communicate and coordinate around that. Laura here is asking me to bring this up. I did not know of the Los Angeles Emergency Preparedness Foundation, who does a lot of coordination and develops a lot of resources for this. They, for an example, might be a great place for us to plug in. OEM, OES, a bunch of alphabet soup, but places to go. I think we also acknowledged under 6.2.1 that there's a lot that this body could do to help those other organizations get the word out. Hey, it's going to be fire season. One of those 3 days a year that is coming. Is your home prepared? And again, the Los Angeles Environmental Emergency Preparedness Foundation will come to your house for free and do an audit for you and help you get ready. So these are things that we want to help support and get out to the public to help them build capacity. And so between 6.1.1, going to need some folks to sit around the table, spend some time, figure out what that looks like, start to put together something that may be helpful. And in case, I think under 6.2.1, more specifically, but under, maybe under both, if the commission is your touch point to local government, then we should be able to help take that touch point and push folks in the right direction to help them in times of need, as well as start to give them tools and things to consider from an education and preparedness standpoint. So those, again, in quick summary, number two, a lot of extra work went in there. Number six, very big overhaul. And for the other ones that we're looking at, I think that we have iteratively improved those to address the comments of this body over the past several months.
Erica's hand is raised online.
I can wait if you're not done.
Done.
I want to cut you off.
Done.
You're done. Okay, thanks. I had a follow-up question to what Luke had mentioned. I can't remember what number, but adding public health in. And so I just wanted to ask a follow-up question. Were you thinking in terms of like the fish consumption and education? He said like that work and you know, outreach to anglers in terms of contaminated fish at related to the PV Shelf Superfund site. I'm wondering if that's where part of where you were going, because that's where my mind went.
Yeah, we're on the same page, Erica. That is
okay. All right, thanks. Question. Okay, appreciate that. Okay,
great. Thank you, and I think
thanks, Tom.
Thank you, Erica Clark.
Yeah, if we could go to the one that's had the most work done. Forgive me, item two, in the double dots at the end, task two. Activity two, or activities, right? Yeah, in the right, furthest right box. The two right boxes, because item 2 point, this is specific to our district. Item 2.2.4, all four supporting. I think we need to define what support means, and it relates to action item 2.1, which we'd love to see something, because I'm beginning to see these things at odds with each other. Protect in-stream flows, enhance in-stream flows. You know, there have been a couple things that have come in front of us at the IRWIMP projects that are proposing to, hey, one way to improve water quality is to get rid of the quantity of it even during wet season and then send it someplace to be treated so that we can all drink it. And I suppose if the end use of that is a septic system, then maybe it's still in the water system locally. But I think there's a real problem here, and LA River is doing a huge study on this, LA River, the in-stream flows study. And I don't know who is in charge of all that in the North Santa Monica Bay watersheds. Like, who's looking out for in-stream flows use? Is there a water keeper? Maybe that's the blank we need to fill on, you know, who's the lead. But is there a water keeper? Is there an adjudicator? Is this something that a regional water quality control? I mean, if you have high quality water, but none of it, that's not necessarily a good water quality controls response. So anyway, I'd like to see qualified support. Yeah, I'm just, you know, the idea that it's all good, no matter where the water comes from, to turn it into drinking water, I think we've got to be careful about that and absolutely support, but maybe it's an action item in 2.1 that needs to get added that is just enhance in-stream flows and diminish variability or something like that.
Thank you, Clark, for your comment. And, you know, some of these projects are pretty complex, and there's various processes, regulatory entities, stakeholders involved. And I think for us, for this commission, is this item is involving conservation and recycling, which we support in general. And I do think in terms of we're supporting as long as people are in compliance with all applicable laws, and there are a variety of entities that protect our natural resource, right? And protect in terms of there are these processes. As a an operator of wastewater facilities, we can't just take water out of the river, right? There's actually a permitting process for that. So I think it's more, I kind of get what you're saying, but it's
not coming out of the river. It's coming out of the water that would go to the river and is supposed to be cleaned in a distributed fashion. And there's always been a pressure at the municipal level to go to the end of the system and put a really fancy box there and make sure all the water that comes out is clean. And now the really fancy box is the One Water Project, is the Pure Water Project, or One Water, I can't remember what the Pure, sorry. So it's, again, it's different, and I'm not sure. I guess I'm asking the question, you're confident there is someone that protects that. I don't know who that is.
Well, this is where, this is great. We're a board with a lot of representation, and that is the purpose, because everyone brings perspective and can help us better understand. And I think Tom wants to make a comment here.
Yeah, no, Clark, totally hear where you're coming from. And I've, not trying to play point counterpoint, but I know folks who talk about having excessive or non-natural or non-background loads of water because of imported water into these systems. So I wish to protect them too. I don't think there's any point in having beautiful water but no stream. So I think that I'd like to just take some time, get something on the counter with you, sit down, figure out where this fits in into underneath this goal, to make sure that we're capturing that completely.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom. Jenny?
I'd like to request to be included on that side meeting if possible. I think there's, I understand what Clark's saying about, this is about revising the language to explain the varying interests and
it's
not
a future
full,
problem.
Like, is right, yeah. The way it reads right now, it just says support, you know, and you want some sort of guidance or consideration of all factors. So I would like to be part of that, because the regional board does play a role in that. And I think I
could
I know
you,
what the
could
state
you put
board's
your name
role
in
as
the,
well, and I could provide input on that too.
Yeah. Could you put your name in the blank box that Luke put up earlier, maybe as the lead? Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board.
But wait, as the lead for the...
Yeah, there's one that you know, we raised it, but we're it's, not...
Is that the in-stream flow one?
Yeah.
Because
in-stream flow, in-stream. Yeah.
I think between, well, as a regulating entity, I mean, we work with the sanitation district on the in-stream flows, you know, the department and the state board have an in-stream flow program. So I was just going to say the same thing. It would be great to have that conversation because I do know what you're saying, and I really appreciate you bringing it up, because we talk about recycling water, and all we're doing is just taking more water out of the stream, and then there's less water in the stream for fish, which really need water. So it is something that we've been dealing with quite a bit. So I would love to have that conversation.
Okay, and I don't know if you were making a joke, but if you are wanting to put in a blank, I would want to talk about it a little bit more, because I might be more appropriately the State Water Board and in combination with Fish and Wildlife, because they do.
I'll do it.
Okay.
I think by default we could put State Water Board. But we could keep tabs on your efforts.
I'm not. I'm sorry, I'm not recommending that it be State Water Board. I don't understand which section of the
I like the regional part of the Water Board, too.
Let me try to play the sorting hat job. little Harry Potter reference for everybody. And figure out let's just get the conversation started without coming up with too many predetermined conditions as to who and what, which is, I think, the way we approach this document overall. Here's what we want to do. Who's the best fit to do that? So let's better assess with a sidebar as to what we're trying to accomplish here. That language will come back before this body for February, and try to figure out who's best positioned to help support and inform and deal with what we come up with.
Yes.
And I'm confident that Jenny can represent the State Water Board, but I'd like to be in on that conversation as well.
Fantastic. I will add your name to the list, Karen. Thank you.
And Tom, I'm sure there are a few people at Las Virgenes who would like to be involved as well.
Oh, that's going to be a fun call. And thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Andy.
Yes, Michael.
Okay, I got to respond. Cliff Clark called out Waterkeeper, so I want to respond because we were doing the flow for a couple of years. There's been some staff shift there, so I'm more than happy to take it back to the big guy at Waterkeeper and beef that up again, because I thought it was a really valuable study, and I'm really sorry to see it go. Plus, I like to get out in the field and do that kind of stuff. So I'll take that note back. Thanks, Clark, for bringing it up here so I can push from the other side.
Waterkeeper's in with a maybe.
Waterkeeper's in with a maybe, yes.
Very good.
Yeah. A strong maybe.
Got it.
Okay, so this is definitely the value of why we get together to have these conversations. Thank you, Clark, for bringing this forward. And Mr. Ford, is there, Dean?
Thank you. I was looking at the red line version. I thought we were going to be discussing that, but I guess you just pulled the chart up. But
we can, if you have questions in regard.
Yeah, in 1.3.3, regarding the Biona wetlands, I don't know how to say this, but when I look at that, there seems to be a little mismatch here, because there are hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars that are needed to do this full-scale restoration. There are other limited, gentle restorations that can be done, along with public trail access. And when I look at this, it just seems kind of a little mismatched, because it's all thrown together, and it seems like we're never going to get any coordination to get anything done at all. So I'm just wondering if this can be separated into two. I noticed that in estimated annual cost, you have 4 question marks. So we're talking about a lot of money if it's going to be a major restoration that may never happen. And there's other gentle things we can work on along with public trail access. And I thought the Bay Foundation was going to be a partner in this, but I'm not sure how that's working out. We have the lead entity as Fish and Wildlife and Army Corps. So
can I comment?
Sure, yeah. I'm throwing all those questions in at once, because I know you're running out of time, but I think that it's important to somehow figure out how we can have this section make more sense than the way it looks right now, because it looks like it'll just sit here like this forever and nothing's ever going to happen regarding it. So,
Aaron, go ahead.
I've been struggling with the same thing, because I don't know what to do with it either, because I don't really know the time and the effort that'll come out of it. So I was going to have that conversation with Tom just to get a little bit more idea of what you guys want to see in it, and then present some maybe changes to it, because I completely understand that it just feels like it's all or nothing in there, you know, because it is just 2 paragraphs. You can't really make sense of what that means, and it's just not 100% clear what the extent of that section meant. So maybe that's a conversation we can have to kind of tease that out and see if we can separate it out into the smaller restoration projects and the larger project.
And here I'll start off, and then Tom can add. Just to remind, and at this point we're looking for input, and we're trying to kind of have this document include ongoing activities. So there is that larger project, that there is a larger project out there, and that there can be the gentle restoration, and one, and maybe it's two activities, but this is where we are looking for your input to help give us that
gentle
language.
It's a smaller project. I just really don't understand the time frame in this, and how definitive does it have to be? If somebody could help me out, because this is my first time having to go through this, I don't know what you want.
Okay. Tom?
10 to 25 years. The do-it-all was, I think, where we ended up the last time, honestly. And then it became very challenging for us to provide a report that said, hey, look, we actually got some stuff done. No, it looked like we did very little across very well-intended, comprehensive approach to getting to work.
Okay,
and
I
this
think
is
I
not
provide...
specific to Biona. This is the overall. The language that was in here is what I placed in there. It was responsive to the comments we received. That term gentle had been shared many times. I put it in quotes because I'm not sure that gentle restoration, if I looked it up in some management guide, it's like, here's what it requires, gently. Hence the quotes. But that's the way the public came to us with this, by and large. Happy to get more detail put in here. That seems to be commensurate with the folks who are the lead agencies, as I understand it, being CDFW and the Army Corps. And so, you know, as the lead entities, you tell me
what
fits and what doesn't, and we make those adjustments.
I think I can help you.
And Aaron, this is where Luke and Tom can get back to you, and this is where we would appreciate. These are your projects that are being reflected in this document, so we are looking for you for information guidance that would be appropriate to include.
That's really helpful.
Chair, sorry to interject. We do have, we are running out of time on this, and we do have a public commenter on this. If you feel it's appropriate, we can have the comment now, or
let's go ahead and hear the public comment. And one, this is an ongoing discussion for us. As Luke mentioned, we are starting off a public comment period again, starting tomorrow. So please reach out to Luke if you have questions, and you know he and Tom are working closely together to make sure that we update this document as we need to for our process here. So let's go ahead and go to public comment, and then we'll close this item because I do want us to discuss the resolution item.
AGP folks, could we get 2 minutes and 2 seconds on a timer, please? Thank you. Walter, you now have the floor.
Thanks, Walter Lamb again, Biona Wetlands Land Trust. I'll keep this quick. Some of the points were touched upon. I do think with the CCMP, it would be really, I think, informative for you all to look at previous CCMPs, not just with regards to Biona, but other things. The first one was 1994. The 1994 CCMP had restoration of the Biona Wetlands as a high priority. And the price tag back then was $15 million, and it was supposed to be done by 1999. You know, obviously, that didn't happen. There's been many other CCMPs with different milestones. And I think what we're looking for is to just have some continuity so we can see progress, like including on the environmental impact statement from the Army Corps. One of the board members did mention a point that I don't think got answered. I've been asking a similar question actually since August, which is the Bay Foundation no longer a collaborative partner? Because that would actually be quite a change from the previous 20 years. So I'll leave it at that because I don't have a lot of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Walter.
All right. Great discussion today. And we will continue looking for input and comments from you. I think Luke can reach out. Please reach out to him. But I think Aaron, Clark, you know, you guys can work together in terms of providing language that you feel is appropriate and balance is what we need to balance, because when it comes to it, you've got to balance protecting natural resources, recycling water, and everything is important. So with that, Luke, can you introduce our next item? And this one is regarding a resolution. And here what we're looking for you is for some direction on, you know, some of the the wording, some of the revisions that we've done to address concerns in terms of funding from EPA and just making sure that, you know, we want to get some direction in terms of your interest of memorializing that at the end of the day, yes, maybe the language is slightly different, but our commitment and our objectives has not changed. So with that, Luke, can you go over what you have?
Yes, thank you, Chair. So we are on item 2B, or sorry, 4B, 4B. So we're skipping back up to this item. We are running low on time, so I will be brief in my setup for this discussion item. This was an idea that actually came out of the October Governing Board meeting, where we reviewed what happened with the 2026 work plan. So just to refresh everybody's memory, but I'm sure you remember, the Governing Board approved of their work plan of the 2026 work plan in April with some revised language that met the requirements of US EPA guidance. The Bay Foundation then submitted that document to the US EPA in June, and then the US EPA accepted that in September with some other revisions that they asked the Bay Foundation to make. And the US EPA confirmed at our executive committee meeting that no further action was needed on that 2026 work plan. However, future documents, not just that work plan, will need to comply with US EPA guidance. And there was an agreed upon sentiment amongst the executive committee that the Santa Monica Bay Restoration should maybe create a document, a resolution that affirms its values and goals, especially related to climate change and support for disadvantaged communities. So, you know, these changes that we need to make in our documents submitted to US EPA really didn't sit well with our executive committee. I don't think they sit well with many governing board members, and it's proposed that we draft a resolution that could, like I mentioned, reaffirm our commitment to values and goals. So that's the setup I have, but please let me know if additional context is needed. And just wanted to hear everybody's thoughts on recommendations that you would have for drafting a resolution, particularly what types of statements and actions should be included in this resolution. We have a few folks from the executive committee that would like to take part in drafting this, but please let me know if anyone else wants to throw their hat into the ring. We can have a discussion on this now. We've got about 15 minutes.
All right, so that's all you have for your presentation?
Yeah, that's all. I wasn't able to convene and put together a draft in time for this meeting. But yeah, we're happy to hear about a resolution and a timeline.
And here, I think, like Luke mentioned, some of the wording of concern was disadvantaged communities, climate change, greenhouse gases, green infrastructure. Those were the types of, I mean, ultimately our work continues as is, but there was some modifications to that. So is there any direction in terms of, are you agreeable that a resolution is appropriate? And maybe at this time, you can maybe share a statement that you might be interested in seeing, or you can, of course, send it, think about it more and send it to Luke, and he and the subcommittee that is working on it can consider it and incorporate it. And the idea would be they can draft a resolution that they can bring forward to our next board meeting. Jacob?
And just to add one element as well, part of the conversation in the executive committee meeting was around the fact that while, of course, part of the reason why we were okay with moving forward with the action plan revisions the way it was with the understanding that the substantive work will not change, I think that, you know, a resolution that is showing the position of this body that is not a document that we are submitting to EPA, but is still making clear where we stand, would help to just kind of alleviate any concerns around any ambiguity on our position.
Thank you, Jacob. Any thoughts, comments, Dean?
Where does this resolution go? What's the purpose of it?
It'll be on our website. Luke?
No, really.
If you have ideas, that was part of what I was trying to garner. Yeah.
So it goes nowhere. I mean, I don't know.
Do you have any suggestions?
We should probably decide whether we really want to do this or not. What's the point? We had to change those words that people aren't happy with. I was against changing those words. I was in the minority on that. Now we changed them. Now you want to create a new resolution because you're not happy we had to change the words. I mean, I don't know. Is that what this is about?
Well, I'll tell my perspective. It's almost memorializing, and I worry that, you know, we are all here together. We know what happened, but a few years from now, there will be different people that might not realize why and what happened, and this resolution will exist. It'll be, I know I mentioned it on our website, but we can share it with others. I mean, this is where we are looking for input, but I know on my end, I was comfortable with making those changes because I know we remain committed, but this is an opportunity to memorialize that commitment. Yes, Dan?
I think I am 100% in support of taking actions to fight climate change, to prepare us for the climate change that is going to happen no matter what we do, to be resilient, to build these resilient shorelines, to work with the disadvantaged communities. I'm out there inhaling the poisons that are burning, right? I'm on the front lines of this stuff. What I don't want to do is risk our ability to get that work done by saying, hey, it's green. It doesn't matter what we call it if we get the work done, you know? And this is like the first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about it, right? Like, if we are going to do this work, like, let's just get the work done. You know, we don't have to advertise that we're doing it to fight climate change. We will be fighting climate change. Telling everyone we're doing that doesn't change how we do it. So if this resolution doesn't risk our funding and our ability to secure grants, then great, let's do it. Let's tell everybody. But if it does risk our ability to do that, and that's something that we all need to think about, if this is going to impact our ability to fund projects that are going to make all of our lives healthier, safer, and better, and the lives of our kids and all the people who don't sit at the table and have the advantages and the privileges that we have, if we're risking their ability to have cleaner water and, you know, fewer fires and better air, like, let's not risk that. Let's just vote next time.
Great. Thank you, Dan. And maybe I think Dan brings up really good points. Thank you. And maybe Erica is online. And Erica, can you share with us in terms of, you know, on our end, there's certain submittals that EPA approves, and that's what the funding is related to. And there's other activities that we do that EPA is not involved in. But maybe Erica can enlighten us. Erica?
I'm going to take a deep breath. Dan, I appreciate all that you just said. And right, if it doesn't come to me, I don't review it, but I can't speak for the entire government and what is, you know, what things that could happen. I think we've all seen what's been happening this year. So I can't give you maybe the, you know, 100% certainty. I know if it doesn't come to EPA, it doesn't go through our approval process where we keep moving. We're going to look at your CCMP. We're going to look at your work plans. If you develop other documents, they're not ours to review. But I can't speak to the government at large. Does that make sense?
Thank you, Erica.
Can I just? Okay.
Sure, Erin.
I just want to point out that I totally appreciate what you're saying, Dan, but I also want to point out that climate change and disadvantaged communities are very key targeted funding mechanisms that I know that we personally have. And so I would think that a resolution would be very helpful, because if that's one of our goals or one of our things we want to support, it's very easy to point to when we're asking for funding. So I feel like it'll help you get funding. So I support the resolution because I don't want to lose that message and that goal.
Great. So at this point, we weren't taking action. We don't have it yet, but I think Luke and our volunteer board members, and if you're interested in providing input, they can work on a product that is brought forward to a future meeting. Eric, you're looking at me. Is there something you want to share?
I would just add that if anyone, and this is something that Martha already said, if anyone has any thoughts, please email me or Luke or both of us with any language you would like.
I'd also like to point out Walter Lamb has raised his hand, presumably to comment on this item. He does have a minute and four seconds left for public comment. So,
sure, we can hear his public comment. Thank you.
Could we get a minute and 4 seconds on a timer? And Walter, sure.
4 seconds.
Give me one moment.
Oh, there it is.
Walter, you now have the floor.
That's a lot of timers for him, huh? I'm amazed.
Am I unmuted?
You are unmuted.
Okay, great. Just quickly, you all know my thoughts on this. I do support a resolution. I appreciate Board Member Francois' frustration as to, you know, is this just putting a Band-Aid on a wound that never had to be made in the first place? But I think reaffirming unapologetically your commitment to science and to environmental justice, I do think that's important. I do disagree with the board member saying that the words are meaningless. I certainly don't think that's true. But I think the biggest thing I would ask that you didn't do the first time is to get some legal advice. I just don't understand why that's not happening. I read Attorney General Rob Bonta's newsletter every Sunday. He is keen on this type of discussion. And without understanding what your rights are with regard to EPA, I mean, you can't ask EPA. I think she's been pretty clear, right? I mean, she's not at liberty to give you that information. I think you need to get the information from the California Attorney General's office. So that's my encouragement. Thank you.
Thank you, Walter.
Thank you all for the discussion and input. Yes, sure.
Thank you. This is Aaron from Supervisor Horvath's office. Very briefly, I just wanted to share, as you're working through this, about a month ago, the LA County Board of Supervisors adopted the latest Our County Sustainability Plan, which is a very, in this political context that we're in and in this moment, that speaks to this balance of equity, environmental justice, and tremendous ambition and conservation and climate goals. So I would just invite the executive committee and others that are working on that resolution. You may want to borrow some of the language, and then for everyone's awareness, we look forward to working on implementing all that with you all here. Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron. Well, almost done here. Item 5A, closed session. We have no closed session today. 5B is any member comment, any governing board members that have any comment on issues that are not on the agenda. Any updates? Or Dan?
Just really quick, I wanted to give some props to the Department of Beaches and Harbors. The way that they've managed our beaches over the years, they do great work. The berms that they put up every winter have been pretty extensive, very large, widespread berms. And through, I think they've got some community feedback. They've got feedback from some of the cities that they're working in. They've got feedback from their own hired experts. The berms this year are significantly more targeted. And they've done a really good job of protecting the natural berm. And I'm bumped that Warren's not here to receive the props, but great job, DBH, on the beaches. What we are seeing this season is that we haven't lost as much sand as we typically do when the berms go up. They had in the past cut pretty deep, and we lose a lot of sand. This year, the beach contour is pretty consistent with where it was back in the summer, despite having some good surf, some real high tides, and conditions that would normally cut pretty hard. We're not seeing it, and it's all props to really good management on their end.
Great. Thank you, Dan. And I think Luke there will capture that in the minute so that Warren sees that. Here's that. And with that, Dean?
Yeah, I just... Oh, there it is. Wanted to tag on a little bit to that. We've had large amounts of sand that is backed right up to the bike path wall. And, of course, in Hermosa Beach especially, it's flat right to the homes. And they are leveling it all out. I don't know whether pushing all that sand further out to the water will protect us more from high ocean water levels or whether it needs to be flattened out with kind of a berm, slight berm up near the water's edge. But that would be the other thing that, and I know our Beaches Harbors isn't here today, but I have noticed that those large berms they put up are less targeted now, and that's probably has benefited. So I just wanted to provide that input with regards to that. I don't know if there's any comment about whether it's better to just have it flat going straight out, because we have a lot of sand. There's a lot of extra sand we have down there. It's too much. It's blowing right onto the bike path wall to the point where we actually may need to create a wall higher to keep it, you know, make a natural dune out of there. So,
all right. Thank you, Dean. All right. So in light that we are at time, I'll be respectful of everyone's time and thank you all for your commitment, the great comment. So only announcement, a couple announcements. Executive Committee will meet January 15 at the Edward C. Little facility, and our next governing board meeting is February 19 at 9:30, and we'll be at the Hyperion's Learning Center. So with that, we can adjourn at 12:02. Happy holidays, everyone. Thank you.